This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, KDLG's weekly news magazine. It's Friday, November 25th. I'm Dave Benninger. Thanks for joining us. We certainly hope you and yours had an enjoyable holiday and had much to be thankful about yesterday. We have something a little different for you on today's show. Last week, thousands gathered for the Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle, the largest trade show of its kind on the West Coast. From fishermen to researchers, harbor masters to boat builders, authors, poets, processors, and more, the Expo is the annual get-together like none other. I spent Thursday, Friday, and Saturday making rounds through the convention hall to see what all the fun and fuss was about, like with seafood economist Andy Wink, who gave a rundown of the fall sockeye salmon market analysis.
Market picture is looking better. We're seeing prices come up a little bit. Demand has been pretty good. Product has been moving through faster.
We'll chat with ADF&G Commissioner Sam Cotton, check in with the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, and drop by a few booths.
People didn't know we were out there and have business, but people are pretty excited about a local brailer business.
And have you heard about the new rubber deck boot from Grundon's that wants to cut into Extra Tough's cornered market next year?
We have every confidence that this boot will perform every bit as good as our rain gear does.
Come along as we recap this year's Pacific Marine Expo on KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond. And with that in mind, I think we should switch our theme music this week. That's more like it. You know, because we can and because we make our own rules on this program, let's start with a reading from the Fisher Poets, who took the main stage at the Expo Hall last Saturday. For my steadfast assurance, picking this particular poem from Rob Seitz has nothing to do with yesterday's gluttonous behaviors.
Hi, everyone. This is my first expo. It's been pretty fun. I have to warn you, though, people have told me that my poems about fishing are very realistic. They've even been known to cause a seasickness-like feeling among those listening to it. So anyway, my first one here is it's a little tribute to the five-gallon bucket, which I haven't seen any new five-gallon bucket technology at this year's expo. So there's 2.5 gallons per flush. Grandpa's old wooden fish boat wouldn't have been complete without that five-gallon bucket outfitted with a toilet seat. You'd just fill it half full of water straight from the deck hose, apply the seat, and assume the pose. There was no plumbing to go awry. When you were done with your business, you just dumped it over the side. Well, those saddle bronc cowboys have nothing on me, because I've rode that bucket in 40-foot seas. And weather like that, it was quite a ride. Pants around your ankles, sliding side to side. The water from the bucket would get your backside drenched, kind of like those toilets designed by the French. Yeah, to ride that bucket, you had to swallow some pride, but it sure beat the hell out of hanging your cheeks over the side. Thanks.
Rob Seitz, a Morro Bay, California commercial fisherman, originally from Alaska and a frequent performer at Fisher Poets gatherings. Well, to this reporter's eye, Bristol Bay fishermen headed to the expo in rather buoyed spirits, at least better than last year. Why? Well, mainly be that price, which had recovered from 50 cents in 2015 to a 75 cents per pound base price in 2016, with some telling us their companies were already up over a dollar now with post-season adjustments. The processors handled all of this year's catch without limits, and many in the set and drift net fleets had pretty big seasons. Bristol Bay's run produced, where sockeye and especially pink fisheries elsewhere in Alaska were dismal. The permit prices are up, somewhere in the neighborhood of $130,000, improved from around $95,000 a year ago. The BBRSDA seems to have regained some confidence from its members. The efforts to defund have quieted down. A snazzy new logo for Bristol Bay sockeye has been released. And processors chipped in quite a bit towards the RSDA's major donation to Fish and Game's management costs. Plus, Fish and Game forecasts just came out, and the numbers for next year are pretty good.
2017, we are forecasting 41.5 million fish to the bay. It's actually pretty much identical to the 10-year average, but it's higher than the long-term average.
That's Greg Buck, who took over as area research biologist for Chuck Brazil. For the fleet, that's a little more manageable number after back-to-back-to-back big returns. Still a lot of fish, but maybe an easier haul for the processors to handle and the markets to sell, says Lang Solberg, who skippers the OD2.
I fish almost exclusively a Naknek Kwijak. I'm excited about the forecast. I'm happy that it's things are seeming to maybe even out a little bit. You know, we're looking at a few million less than the last couple of years, and I think I'm hoping that we're entering into a somewhat of a perfect storm with run size and market conditions that'll give everybody a little bit of something to hopefully turn a profit in the Bay this coming year. So everything's looking pretty good.
The BBRSDA commissions sockeye market analyses from the McDowell Group twice a year. The fall version was just published. Andy Wink is a seafood economist who tracks the markets and helps author the report. When I caught up with him at the show, I asked him to run down some of the highlights.
Basically, I think the highlights is that the wholesale market picture is looking better. We're seeing prices come up a little bit. Demand has been pretty good. Product has been moving through faster. In some past years, we've seen buildup of inventories, and that's always problematic going into the next year. So it's good to see products selling faster and to see prices coming up as well. I think overall there's a lot of positive aspects to look forward to. Unfortunately, if you didn't fish in Bristol Bay this year and you were fishing elsewhere in Alaska for salmon, you probably didn't have a very good year. So that's kind of the downside, and a lot of the processing companies that are in Bristol Bay have plants elsewhere that probably didn't fare so well. So there's, you know, the Alaska sector, Alaska salmon overall, wasn't nearly as good as it was in Bristol Bay.
Meaning Bristol Bay sockeye may be doing well, but that doesn't necessarily translate to a better take home for Bristol Bay fishermen, because companies might spread their losses around a little bit.
Yeah, it's more like going into next year, how does that affect cash flow? And if they have losses elsewhere, that's just the long and short of it. We'll see. The forecasts are starting to come out. The forecast is pretty good for Bristol Bay. We'll have to see where the other ones come in. You know, hopefully the fish come back next odd year, especially for pinks. And if we get a good run of chum, then I think it could still be a really good year.
Can you tell if American consumers are growing more interested in salmon, or about the same, or less? Or you mentioned the refresh. Is kind of a growing popular trend. What do you know about the American markets?
You know, globally we've seen farm production kind of come down and farm prices are high. And so that brings the baseline up. I mean, retailers get a premium for selling sockeye. So they love sockeye. it's great that retailers can get that premium. I hope that eventually that will mean higher wholesale prices for Alaska processors, which in turn would mean higher ex-vessel prices for fishermen. And I think the branding, program is a great step in doing that, and especially for Bristol Bay in terms of kind of like locking in that identity and locking in that market share. Because if they're going to put a brand on it and say this is Bristol Bay sockeye, then it does have to be Bristol Bay sockeye, you know. And so that kind of builds in a market for you. As this goes and throughout the years, there could be periods where you're undersupplied, but that's the nature of wild fisheries, and we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But for now, there's a lot of growth, I think, on the refresh side, because they can turn out a really nice looking product. And not just refresh, but even like the frozen sides that are vacuum packed, they can slack those out, take them out of the bag, put them in sort of overwrap portion packages or in the case, and they can still have a really nice looking product. I mean, there's nothing like Alaska or Bristol Bay sockeye, deep red in a case, that's really high quality fish. It sells itself, so of course you're going to get a premium. And with where farm prices are at wholesale wise, their margins on those have got to be shrinking. So yeah, I think it does make Alaska salmon, more attractive for retailers, and if they're excited about it, they're going to get their consumers excited about it. you know, and they know, and ASME's done a lot of research, BBRC has done a lot of research. I mean, it's obvious that the sort of where the American consumer is going is towards the attributes of, you know, of what Alaska and Alaska salmon has. I mean, I think, you know, if you're Alaska salmon producer, harvester, processor, would you rather be on this side of the fence, or, you know, on the farm side of the fence, trying to kind of figure out, you know, yeah, we've got the volume and the consistency, but they've got their own issues, and I don't think they have as a compelling story, you know, as Alaska producers.
Let me ask you about the farm. We know that in the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, they hit some major stumbling blocks with algae in down south and lice up north, and their production fell. They're going to come back. How soon do you think that will happen, and what impact will that have on wild retail?
Well, I think there's looks like there's a nice window developing here, because the banks that track the farm sector very closely have said they don't expect farm production to get back to 2015 levels until 2019. So we're looking at several years of probably, you know, kind of a subdued supply of farm salmon. And, you know, we're at record high prices right now for farm salmon, despite the strong dollar. So I think, that's good news for Alaska fishermen.
Briefly, let me ask your sense on currency and trade. I know even following the election, there was some concern that trade could be impacted. What's your sort of outlook on the next 6 months, year, ahead of next season anyway, on currency and trade?
You know, the things that I've read have just been more long-term, that, you know, they're not sure how, you know, the euro gets back to where it was, that type of thing. The yen has strengthened a lot this year, so that actually looks a lot better than it was. But I mean, as far as trade is so important to the Alaska seafood industry. About 60-70% of the value goes to export markets. So it's vital that we maintain the ability to trade freely with these countries. I mean, China is our biggest trading partner. The EU and Japan are our biggest final markets in terms of exports. So, you know, we don't know what we're going to get with this administration. And there's, you know, there's certainly everybody, I think, within the industry is keeping a close eye on it. And we'll just have to try to react as things come up and also make it known. I mean, I think the delegation does a great job, and people in the industry do a good job basically, you know, giving them the information to say this is how important it is, and they do a good job carrying that message in Washington. And we're going to need that now, I think, more than ever.
One more question. You've been rather prescient every time we've talked to you on what you're looking at the moment. You think we'll see a higher price for the fleet next year, lower price, about the same? What's your crystal ball telling you here in late 2016 about next 2017?
Oh, man, it is really early, Dave. It's really early. I think I'm going to say no comment for now because, you know, we thought we knew it was going to happen a month ago, and, you know, sometimes things don't go the way you think they're going to go. I think things, all I can say is that for now, you know, at least in Bristol Bay, if you fish in Bristol Bay, it was a good year, and things look durably good there, you know, at the moment. Hopefully the rest of, you know, the areas can come back so the Bay doesn't have to absorb those, you know, kind of going on in the future.
Andy Wink is a seafood economist with the McDowell Group. This is Bristol Bay and Beyond, recapping the Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle last weekend. Back in a moment. The Bristol Bay Fishery is working hard to improve the quality of the fish delivered to tenders, as less of the bay's catch goes in the can and more goes out fresh or frozen. Chilling the catch on board is becoming not just important for many, but required. The 2016 data is not available yet, but in 2015, just 55% of the drift deliveries were chilled in RSW or slush ice before delivery. The McDowell Group says that number should have been 82%, to satisfy the H&G and fillet production that year. Some smaller and older vessels may be hesitating to add RSW based on either the price or space, At the expo, Peter Regan, the owner of Stay Cool Refrigeration in Naknek, pointed out two of the smaller units he says will get the job done without costing too much or taking up too much room on board.
I guess we're here to talk about the 3- and 5-ton integrated marine systems, RSW systems. The 5-ton will probably refrigerate 7,000-8,000 pounds of fish, is good for it. And this one probably 3,000-5,000 pounds, the 3-ton. And either one of these will run on a Cessna 277 load sensing pump, which is a very small pump. It requires 6 gallons of oil per minute to run the 5-ton. And it probably takes, well, probably 5 gallons to run this one, which is not a lot of oil. You know, this is small footprint. If you like this, it's got the same compressor as they use on a 10-ton system. And the compressor half, this can be split to make it a very small footprint. And you can put one section one place, the other section somewhere else. And so for small areas. And this, if you ever wanted to, you could convert this to a 10-ton system.
Somebody pulls up to the dock in June and they say, I'm ready, I want to add one. What's the cost of the unit and installation start to finish?
Okay, let's see, the unit here, this 5-ton is right around $17,000, something like that. And this 3-ton is probably right around $15,000, something like that. And installation will depend on, you know, if the boat needs to be insulated. If it's a fiberglass boat, some of them don't have to be insulated, but insulation's a big factor. And I would say possibly it can be up to $10,000 to install it. So you're looking at probably $25,000 for this one, and probably $27,000, something like that, for this one here.
These are the kind of investments that everybody in the Bay, if they haven't made them already, are definitely considering.
Oh, yeah.
Some are holding out with ice and such. Why do you tell people this is the investment to make now?
Okay. You know, ice is good refrigeration. Can't get away from there, that, but it's also very difficult to get ice. I mean, it's really a pain for guys, you know. And so that's why the RSW systems are really good, because you got it with you all the time. And, you know, it pays 10 to 15 cents a pound for refrigerated fish. So, I mean, they will pay themselves back, and depending upon your catch, but they can pay themselves back in the first year if you catch a lot of fish, you know, or second year, then you're making money with it. And I know guys that have made hundreds of thousands of dollars with these.
You'd be happy to see a whole lot of these going to a whole lot more boats in the Bay, huh?
Oh, yeah. They're going to make money, you know.
And bring up the quality?
Oh, yeah. Definitely bring up the quality, yeah.
Pete, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Peter Regan from Stay Cool Refrigeration. Here's Patrick Dixon with another reading from the Fisher Poet stage.
This is a piece that I've got a book over there that's, and it goes, I am from Gillnetters, from the Skookum 2 and Veronica K. I am boats floating a night sea, circles on the back of a wave. I am from salmon slime, flake ice, scales, and gurry. I am hissing stick rips, glassy seas, wild horse, white-maned wave stampedes. I am water haul and round haul, radio fish and sunken nets, clatters, splashers, nudgers, jerkers, nothing much, and better get over here now. I am from beer on the back deck, baseball caps and rubber boots. I am from where sunrise ignites the sea, volcanoes vent over the island, belugas rise to greet stars. I am the shuddering slam of the hull, salt spray on the windows, needles of rain on my cheeks. I am a fire in the cabin, a blown fan belt, oil in the bilge, catching a line from a tender for a tow. I am a flash in the distance, white caps in the rip. My bow, slicing ocean swell, foam in my wake. Thank you.
You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay and Beyond as we recap this year's Pacific Marine Expo that happened last weekend in Seattle. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game always has a booth to meet and greet with fishermen and the industry. Many bent the ear of Commissioner Sam Cotton, who makes it an annual trip.
Well, I've come since I've been commissioner. I think it's a good idea to be here. Believe me, there's been a lot of people that have been able to have access and tell me what's on their mind. And the fact is, I usually learn something, so it's a good thing for me, too.
Right along those lines, what are people telling you? What's on their minds? What are you learning from the various parts of this industry while you're down here?
Well, in addition to myself, we've got some leadership of the commercial fishing division here, and so they're able to answer a wide variety of questions, from science questions like why didn't the pink salmon show up to what's the management plan going to look like next year. And so people are able to have access to the leadership in the division there that is good. One of the big issues that we're dealing with on the North Pacific Council is the trawlers would like a catch share program in the Gulf of Alaska, so a lot of people are discussing that subject. And again, you end up learning something, and that's a very hot topic.
Fishermen are never happy with everything. What else are they sort of griping about? Of course, there's concerns that the department will have enough money to effectively manage that kind of, those concerns.
Yeah, budget and perhaps even fish taxes. Last year, the governor had a fish tax bill that may or may not show up this year. But budget's a big deal. We're hoping to get some stability in our budget, because anytime you reduce management, that often also says that we have to be more conservative in our management. If we don't know enough to say, yes, our number one job is to protect the fish, our number two job is to provide, make sure that the fishermen have access to those fish if there's a surplus. And so more information gives us more confidence to provide more access. So budget's a big deal.
Speaking of budget, I'm not an expert on this, but doesn't the governor owe one out within the next 2 or 3 weeks? And what do you think that's going to show for your department?
Well, yeah, the governor will have, by law, required to produce a budget by December 15th. And we're working with his people on producing that budget. And won't make any announcements on anything until he does. But we're hopeful that we're not going to suffer too greatly. But the legislature will then see the budget, and that's another level of scrutiny and decision-making that we'll try to work with them, too.
You've been right across from all these Bristol Bay folks. What have they had to say to you?
Well, Bristol Bay has been good. They're interested in stable funding for Bristol Bay management, and many of the organizations in Bristol Bay are we're having serious discussions with them as to how they may participate in some of that funding. They already do to some level. There's some discussion about even a bigger contribution to the funding. It's in everybody's best interest to make sure that Bristol Bay has a management level necessary to ensure that there's a good harvest. And so we've been enjoying a good working relationship with the organizations in Bristol Bay.
Are you still liking the job?
It's very exciting, never a dull moment.
You stick around?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've committed to this governor for the 4 years, and if he runs again, we'll have to see on that, but I'll be here for a couple more years at least.
Sam Cotton, Commissioner of the Department of Fish and Game in Alaska, thanks so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
A couple of years back, a lot of the talk at Expo was about boots. Specifically Extra Tufts, which were trying to gain their reputation back with fishermen who were not happy with the made-in-China versions of their long-favored footwear. Extra Tufts did improve their product, but the boot chatter this year was on account of a new entry into the market developed and designed by this guy.
Mike Jackson, President Grundon's USA.
Yes, that Grundon's, the one so many of Alaska fishermen trust for the rain gear they practically live in during the season. Jackson started Grundon's USA in 1991, and prior to that, he fished Alaska's waters, purse seining and gill netting in Southeast, longlining in the Gulf of Alaska, and crab fishing in the Bering Sea. He says he knows the importance of the gear fishermen wear, and he spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make a better boot.
It came from all those years on deck and standing on deck and being uncomfortable wallowing around in my own perspiration. And I couldn't help but think that there wasn't a way to celebrate the athlete and fisherman. Any guy running up and down the stack, or any guy piling web, any guy pulling in a gill net in Bristol Bay, those are all athletic endeavors. And you've got people on basketball courts that have got footwear that allows them to perform at their best. And what I set out to do was develop something that allowed fishermen to perform at their best.
Grundon's new Deck Boss boot is gray with orange trim above the sole. Jackson says he had some basic criteria in mind as he set about the design.
We have to start with the non-slip. Non-slip on a wet metal or wooden surface is a real critical aspect of a boot for a fisherman. Secondly, it has to be incredibly comfortable. It has to have a fold-down feature so that when you're not working, you want to be able to roll the top down. And you have to have, your foot becomes a tool, so you have to be able to kick, you have to be able to move stuff around with your foot. So we had to harden up the toe a little bit without putting a steel toe in, because steel toes tend to get really cold.
Grundon's deck boot differs from its competition beyond appearances. One major difference is that the boot is all one piece of rubber constructed using injection molding. That avoids the glued seams that pull apart and defeat the waterproofing, and also allow Jackson to play around with the other new features.
Like reliefs that allow it to flex a little better, to build up the area in the heel to provide a little bit more support, and to actually give it a little bit of styling. And one of the features that this has as a result of this process too is a groove in the boot that allows the boot, we call it the boot band, and everybody knows what the rubber bands are to gather your pants together. So we were able to engineer that relief into the shaft of the boot, so this boot band has a place to live all the time.
Something Jackson is particularly proud of is a unique insole that keeps the wearer's foot slightly above the bottom of the boot, and thus above water or sweat that collects in rubber boots. He calls it a bilge. There's also a cavity in the heel that allows for more than 1 inch of foam,
which renders the boot incredibly comfortable. So when you have the opportunity to just kick back into your heel, you drop into it's like a mattress. I mean, it's this sense of relief. And what we have been witnessing here at the show time after time again, when people try on these boots, is there's this slow spreading smile across their face of somewhat disbelief. And then they say, oh my God, are you kidding? Is this for real?
Grundon's USA is building their new boots in the Pacific Northwest, and they hope to roll them out next spring ahead of the summer fishing season. Jackson says they'll be priced competitively, and he believes fishermen will trust the company name and give this new boot a chance.
We have every confidence that this boot will perform every bit as good as our rain gear does.
Across the expo hall, Extra Tufts had a busy stream of traffic as consumers checked out their latest lineup, which includes a lot of stylish new waterproof rubber footwear practical for more than just fishing. Bo Tai is an associate product manager for parent company Honeywell. Word spread quick that Extra Tufts were preparing to launch something new of their own, and that they were partnering with the Salmon Sisters.
So in February of 17, we're launching three boots with them. They designed exclusively two patterns for us on the inside of boots. So as many Alaskans know, they roll Extra Tufts down. So we enlisted them to design two specific designs for us, and it's been really well received in the community.
Rumor on the street is that there's a new Extra Tuff fishing boot coming out next year. Can you say anything at this point?
At this point, no. My lips are sealed, but expect it in the next half year or so, and I will say it will be huge.
This is Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Back in a moment. Coming up shortly, a BBRSDA board member tells us what that organization has been up to. Before that, let's drop by a few of the more than 400 booths and see what some others had to say.
Diane Hill, and I am the manager of Bristol Bay Brailer, and we live in Naknek.
What's the reaction you've gotten so far during the show, the expo?
Really positive. People didn't know we were out there and have business, but people are pretty excited about a local brailer business.
And you've been in business for one season, right?
One season.
And how are things going with the slush bag and net bag making business?
It's going really well. We got a lot of orders. We were surprised at how much we had our first season, but we've gotten a lot of orders at the expo and exposure, and so it's going really well.
Aside from being a local company that's providing fisheries equipment for Bristol Bay fishermen and the rest of the state, but what else are you excited to offer customers that's different?
We do a lot of custom work, so it's always fun when somebody's got a new idea or something they're trying to come up with and that we can help them make that happen.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is working hard to get more people around the world eating more seafood. Of course, it promotes Alaska seafood, as its name implies, sometimes in unique and interesting ways. Last summer, ASME helped organize and sponsor a Togiak Herring Week in Seattle, featuring filleted herring caught last spring on the menus and in the groceries of dozens of places around that city. At the ASME booth, I found the brains behind that effort.
Bruce Schockler, and I'm the Global Food Aid Director here at ASME.
After that Togiak Herring Week wrapped up in Seattle, what was your takeaway? Were the chefs and the customers pretty stoked about that?
They were. We had 35 restaurants eating it 50 different ways, and it was very, very well received. We made a little cookbook. It's a beautiful thing, and I ate every single dish 35, 40 different ways in 5 days, so do the math on that one.
What was the best?
Gosh, I don't know. You know, the grilled herring might have been one of my favorites. But there was, God, there was, they made a pate, fritters, it was pickled, it was about everything you can possibly think of doing with it.
The Bristol Bay Fishermen's Association, formerly AFMA, was busy signing up new members and sharing about its goals of protecting and promoting the fishery and lobbying for fair wages for the fleet. George Wilson Jr. of Naknek was behind the booth, and I asked what he'd been sharing with those who stopped by.
Just the issues in the bay in general, about the concerns of the drifters, and what can we do to try and maybe help protect, but then also raise any of the concerns that the other fishermen may have.
Are people signing up? Are they wanting to join? I know there was a push for that last summer.
Yeah, and last year we had the most new members join, and it's looking really well this year. We're always looking for new members. We'd really love to see a lot more local members in Bristol Bay joining the association. We have set netters for the first time. They're always able to join before, but now it's in our bylaws that if we get at least 20% membership, they get a seat on our board.
And it should be in their interest, because part of the goal is to get a good price for everybody.
Yes, yes. And that's been a topic with us every year,
right?
And trying to raise that grounds price. And it's definitely one of our goals.
Has it been a good expo?
Been great, great. You know, I think with the overall state's fisheries condition, though, it's attendance, I think, is down a little bit. But for the Bay region, we're seeing good participation.
George Wilson, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Over on the table where we've got our book set up, she has a new publication of hers called The Glass Jar, which is a wonderful book about all sorts of things, but all sorts of things surrounding fishing. So please give a welcome to Erin Freistad.
Woo! You know, it's not that fishermen aren't up at this hour. They just don't like to be told what to do. So showing up at a specific time is really hard on them, unless it's an opening. So first of all, well, thank you to Pacific Marine Expo for hosting the Fisher Poets again. It's really an honor to be part of this community, and it's wonderful to read to a bunch of people who actually understand everything we're talking about. We don't have to explain what a bear trap is or a false deck. Everybody here gets it, and I really appreciate that. And I want to thank Pat Dixon for organizing us to be here today, and also for our event this evening on the Virginia Five. So, as Pat mentioned, I have a new book out. It's called The Glass Jar, and it's from my 15 years working in the commercial fishing industry and on a research vessel. And really, I wrote this book for the fishing community, because it really is all of our stories. So I'm going to read out of The Glass Jar. And I will start with the epigraph that opens the book. And this is from an article that was published in Alaska Fisherman's Journal back when that was still around. And this is what the title of the book comes from. I realized what we had done. We'd released the lid on the glass jar, the jar of understanding fishermen share. We've all placed things in the jar the outside world can't understand. I understood, sitting on that bed in the hotel, we have to do this, gather and open the jar before it gets too full and shatters. Okay, so I'm just going to read four poems out of the book. And the book actually starts with a true story. Almost all of them are true, as much as fishermen can tell the truth. And this did happen on my 14th birthday out on Lake Union. 14th birthday. The smoke brought a crab boat to our rescue. Black steel, crack in the storm windows, just back from winter in the Bering Sea. Unshaven men stood at the rail, peering down at us. One of their heavy tie-up lines landed on our deck. A fire extinguisher stood ready. Shouts were exchanged. No flames reported. Smiles formed in their beards. The engineer climbed down to examine our problem. His thick, oil-stained hands moved with experience. He spit on deck after he talked, wiped his nose with his sleeve. His advice sounded simple. They towed us back to the harbor. Side by side we traveled. I watched lines, taut, slack, taut, as our little pleasure boat tried to keep up. The unshaven men returned, took turns smoking cigarettes, watching our progress. A woman appeared, dressed like the men, a black wool coat and knee-high rubber boots. Her hair danced wild around her face. She winked, gave me a gentle wave. I blushed, looked at my feet. Before leaving us safe in the harbor, they accepted food and drinks. They told us of their season, each person adding details to the story. High winds, shallow waters, icy decks, plentiful crab, and a good price. Sometimes the speaker would pause, look off over our heads, searching for the words that could make us understand, living on the ocean through the season of darkness, on the rise and fall of 30-foot waves. I surveyed the boat. Contents of the window sills, slow turn of the radar, dents along the hull, orange and yellow rain gear hanging from the back of the house. The woman caught me staring, motioned me closer, offered her hand from over the rail. So that's where it started. As a 14-year-old, I knew I was going to be a commercial fisherman.
That was Aaron Freistad on the Fisher Poet stage at Pacific Marine Expo. More from there still on the way. You're listening to Bristol Bay and Beyond on KDLG. Last summer, United Fishermen of Alaska commissioned an extensive survey of commercial fishermen, asking specifically about their concerns about salmon habitat. Overwhelmingly, those who responded, who were many, said they care very deeply about Alaska's salmon habitat, as it supports their jobs, family, and identities. Lindsay Bloom is a UFA board member and managed this survey. She and Aura Landau presented their findings at the expo, and I caught up with them afterwards for the condensed version.
Hi, my name is Aura Landau. I'm with True North Communications, and I worked with UFA to produce and circulate and evaluate the survey on Alaska fish habitat.
Can you run down some of the methodology, how many people participated, and how you crunched all these numbers?
Sure, with a lot of coffee. About 500 Alaska fishermen took the survey over the summer. They answered 21 questions. They were highly qualitative in nature. We asked a lot of open-ended questions. We got paragraphs of information in response. People were very passionate about sharing what fish habitat meant to them, to their families, to their bottom line, to price, to just everything that's important to them and who they are. And so fishermen are notoriously difficult to survey. So this survey size of getting over 500 people is a huge representative of the industry. It's about 2.4% of commercial fishing permit holders that completed the survey, so it's highly statistically valid. This is really, really deep data that's produced in this research, and the opinions about habitat were very rich.
Hi. Yeah, my name's Lindsay Bloom, and related to this project, I am the Salmon Habitat Information Project Manager for United Fishermen of Alaska.
What stood out to you with this survey in particular?
All right, so in particular, I was very impressed with fishermen and excited, and I think what'll stand out to a lot of listeners out there is that fishermen said that they care about salmon habitat for a whole lot of reasons, more than they care about what they get paid for fish. And we all know how passionate fishermen are about the price and the bottom line each season. So that, to me, in terms of where value for habitat falls, shows that it's very, very high.
Meaning that fishermen have a long-term perspective, something other than just what am I going to make this year? What does it tell you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all interpret what it might mean. You know, for me personally, I my father fishes, my family fishes, and we do have a long-term perspective. I imagine my children growing up fishing and at least having the same opportunities to be part of the industry that I did. So I think there's that long-term perspective, and just, you know, being out fishing, whether you're fishing from the beach or out on the water, whatever kind of gear you're using, I think fishermen are uniquely and very intimately in touch with the importance of habitat for salmon.
A couple of key types of concerns and even a couple of key projects were raised, and statistically higher than the rest, I suppose. What were those?
Yep. So in the broader sense, the largest concerns were mining, hard rock mining, and climate change and ocean acidification, or climate change related issues. So those sort of stood out to us globally. And then when we asked fishermen locally, what are you most concerned about in your region, the proposed pebble mine and transboundary mine development in Canada were the most mentioned projects.
Did you get the sense that fishermen are optimistic for the future, pessimistic for the future, engaged? How do you characterize their overall mentality about protecting habitat? We'll come back to you.
We asked fishermen, some fishermen, how often they had taken certain actions on behalf of salmon habitat in the past, and then another set of the fishermen, how often they would be, how likely they are to take those actions in the future. And we got a stunning number of engagement on this. So it was close to 96% of fishermen take some kind of action. I have taken some kind of action in the last year, and multiple kinds of actions, from talking to other fishermen, donating to organizations that deal with habitat, signing petitions, calling a decision maker, testifying in a hearing, writing a letter. I mean, they are really, really engaged. So whoever's talking about habitat to like their friends or like on the docks, like, that's really significant. It's a really important voice. And then when we asked people if they were likely to take an action on behalf of habitat, the numbers jumped even higher. And so it just shows that people are willing to go to the mat for something that's so important to them. And of course, again, what we saw in the survey was that this is about identity, just as much as it is about a job.
One more for you. I noticed you had trusted sources of information and how that sort of lined up. What stood out to you?
Who were the highest and who were the lowest on the trusteds? I did notice KDLG
it's
in there.
Dave Benninger came.
I thought we'd be a bigger. We were kind of a little tight. Jay Barrett, I think, stood out. Lainey Welch, where's she at?
Jay Barrett, where's she at? Yeah. Let's see. The most trusted sources of information about Alaska fish habitat are Alaska Department of Fish and Game scientists and local and regional fishing groups. And then the least trusted sources of information are ones I think that people see as more political, and that the ones that were listed in here that were given as options were Trout Unlimited and the governor.
Last question, Lindsay, is with this survey that stands out as a survey for its comprehensive extent, I suppose, what's next?
Okay, so now UFA knows a lot more about what fishermen think habitat is, and we actually found that overwhelmingly fishermen sort of think of habitat as freshwater and ocean, but primarily freshwater. We also know that they care very deeply, which was our hunch. And what's also kind of interesting, and maybe interesting for other people out there as well, is that fishermen are very engaged on social media, that they are interested in being communicated with via, you know, Facebook or Instagram. A few of them tweet and many of them text. So what UFA will do next is we will sort of, especially for me, like with climate change, I'm like, wow, that's like rising to the top for so many people. So we're definitely going to bring in some, you know, federal scientists and experts on climate change related issues, have our organization and our board members at our next board meeting get more educated and get ourselves informed about sort of how our industry and, you know, management of our fisheries, et cetera, can be engaging and managing for that.
One thing that stood out in the survey was that fishermen from all over Alaska care about the Pebble Mine. Fishermen from all over Alaska care about Chewitna. Fishermen from all over Alaska care about Transboundary. Fishermen from all over Alaska care about pollution. Like, even these things that we think about as being anchored in a certain geographic area or a certain fishery, fishermen are coming together around, because I think that they see some unity in the industry, and it definitely the challenges or the threats that those things pose in to a particular area, like, they really identify with those. And I think that also goes to the very deep meaning that salmon habitat has to people.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And finally this week, I attended the two-hour BBRSDA member meeting at the Expo. Most of the news was pretty upbeat. I asked one of the board of directors to help sum it all up.
Okay, so Lang Solberg, the OD2 out of NACNEC, and I'm the secretary treasurer on the RSDA.
So the RSDA held a meeting for its members yesterday. There was probably 100 or so. Nobody seemed very upset, and that's kind of an improvement, I guess, for the RSDA's sake, but run down for me some of the things the RSDA has been up to and the members seem to appreciate.
Well, the last couple of years, the RSDA has been really focused on tangibles that the members can take advantage of and harness and use to their potential in their own small businesses. I would probably start by saying our PR and outreach efforts have been very, very robust since we just established a PR outreach committee about a year and a half ago. Michael Jackson has been on the road for a couple of years now, two different projects. Some of our members in Dillingham and NACNEC and other places around Bristol Bay might have attended those town halls that Michael Jackson hosted. And that, those were, he was out there in the effort of trying to solicit on-the-ground feedback by our membership, having to do with all of our projects. He's going back out this year on a slightly more condensed version surrounding festivals and such, and we just approved funding for Michael to come to Winterfest and Beaver Roundup actually this winter to set up a booth and help get back in touch with members out there. Besides the town hall outreach efforts, we've been partnering with other organizations. Last year, some members, it was a little bit late in the game, but we nailed it down in April or May. Some members might have heard about the Apollo Medevac Transport Insurance for $32 a head. captains and crew can get medevac insurance in the unfortunate event that they'd have to fly themselves or someone on their vessel out to Anchorage for medical reasons, which can be extremely expensive. So we're going to try and partner with them again this year. We've also been in communications with Alaska Marine Lines with the quality incentives that the processors have been slowly laying out in a big push toward refrigeration. Alaska Marine Lines is seeming willing to extend a discount to the fleet, to those members who need and want to ship their boat south to have refrigeration-related work done. Those details, the actual discount and the logistics are going to become more clear after the new year. So look for that on our website and through our Waypoints mailings.
Seems like the RSDA is kind of using its combined buying power to try to benefit some of these programs and purchases that everybody makes, even some airline discounts perhaps.
Yeah, we're a body of 1,800 permit holders, and usually when you go to the store or you need something, if you can buy in bulk, you're usually going to get a better price, and we recognize that with the membership. Here, just on the floor at Expo, we did go have a first chat with someone from Alaska Airlines. She was with Alaska Air Cargo. Nothing's come from that yet, but it's the beginning of a conversation we'd like to have, potentially about discounts for passenger service and even furthermore for maybe for air cargo to help some of our direct marketing efforts out. But again, those are just preliminary conversations, and we're going to be touching base with Alaska Airlines this winter. So,
do you get the sense the members are satisfied with the direction and programs of the RCA, perhaps more so than a year or two ago?
I think the general consensus is improving in terms of where the RSDA is headed. I think the RSDA's involvement with some issues with regard to Pebble and other issues are good causes. I think the timing is such that it's time for the RSDA to really put its best foot forward on the marketing end of things, and that's where we are in the moment right now. And I'm really pleased with our branding campaign. Having a local Alaskan campaign put together by a local Alaskan firm, Rising Tide Communications in Anchorage, getting a lot of bang for our buck and having absolutely beautiful deliverables down in our Boulder pilot project is something that I'm so excited to see, and to be in the member meeting yesterday and see the bright red logos with the black backgrounds and the red flesh and everything that is Bristol Bay. It was a lot of fun to see. So we're working on 2.0 right now, expanding on the momentum that has been generated by our first year pilot project. It's hopefully only going to get better, and we're going to keep building on this momentum as with regard to marketing.
That was Lang Solberg, who skippers a drift boat out of Naknek in the summer and is a board member with the BBRSDA. He brings us to the end of this special Bristol Bay and Beyond, a recap and rundown of the happenings at last weekend's Pacific Marine Expo in Seattle, at least three Bristol Bay lens. There's more to tell, and we'll have additional coverage online and next week in our regular news. You can find this and past episodes of Bristol Bay and Beyond at our website, www.kdlg.org. Send feedback, news tips, and story ideas to dave@kdlg.org or give us a call here at the station. I'm Dave Benninger. I'll leave you with one more poem, this one from Clem Stark, who has a new book of poems out called Old Dogs, New Tricks. Hope to see you back here next week.
I mentioned earlier that poem called At Sea. Here's one that's called On the Beach. I should mention that there's mentioned in it a folk song, which some of you know the great Canadian folk singer Stan Rogers. This is from a song that he wrote and performed called The Genie Sea. On the beach, I'll go to sea no more, is what I'm thinking, remembering the words of the song while listening to waves crash on the beach. I'm in a motel on the Oregon coast. It's midnight, full moon, January of my 66th year. The way the song goes, a man, his son, and a hired hand set out for the Grand Banks to fish for cod in a boat built by the man's father. What it was she struck, they never knew, but suddenly every seam poured water. I've been to sea. I have a son. And you could say my life is a boat built by my father. Thank you all.
So come on, you lads, draw near to me, that I be not forsaken. This day was lost, the genie see, and my whole life has been taken. I'll go.